Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, remembering Roger Bannister.
Near the finish, Landy, who had some distance between him and Bannister, is kind of probably wondering, where is Roger? Looks over his left shoulder. Unfortunately for Landy, at that moment, Bannister's famous finishing kick is the turbojets are on, and he's flying by Landy's right side to the finish. They both broke 4 minutes, and what a great, great race, and Bannister was the victor that day.
Running for a fallen friend.
He was such a highly respected lawyer and manager, and not just within our office, but in the whole legal community in Canada. So I thought it'd be a great way to pay our respect for him.
And a running streak that has lasted almost 40 years.
I tried to take one day at a time. You know, my wife always takes me out on the anniversary, but we'll see what happens at 40.
All of that and more coming up on iRun Radio. We are joined now by the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hello there, sir.
How are you this week? I hear you're under the weather a little bit.
Yeah, this is good. I'm glad we get to do this right now because I made a decision. I found myself on the crossroads, and I knew I was coming down with something, and I was feeling sick, but I decided to myself that I was going to push through and race anyway. And then I decided that since I was going to race anyway, I might as well go for it, you know, try a PB because I've been training so much anyway. But I went out there, and it was one of those runs. I mean, frankly, it's just one of those runs that makes you want to quit running.
Really?
You know,
what race was this? What event were you in?
I was in Burlington at the Chili Half.
Okay.
Which is an event. The funny thing is, I've probably done, like, there's no goal for me. Like, it doesn't matter what my time is at the Burlington Chili Half, you know? It's not, I haven't, like, been, that
yeah.
doesn't mean anything. But some part of my brain, and I'm glad I get to discuss this on the radio, because it's like, I guess other people do this too. And some part of me, actually, as sick and horrible as I feel now, I almost kind of felt like I wanted to do that. I wanted to get there. I put myself through that. And then I was wondering, why? What is that? And I'm not really sure, but now I am... I think, you know what it is? You ever hear that it feels so good when you stop?
Yeah, I've heard people say that all the time. Yeah.
I think I had to put myself there so I could stop for a little while. And now, sure enough, you know, I can't do anything.
Okay. So you're taking a little break to recover from whatever this is, and then you'll get back to your Boston Marathon training, right?
Yeah, that's it. And hopefully this time I will have learned a lesson. I mean, it's funny because I've probably done, I mean, if you were to add up cumulatively, I must have done, you know, I don't know, 70 races. How many races do you think you've done? 50? I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I've done, 55, something in that range.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just, but it's just some part of my thing that, like, I just, each time you do it, and I guess this is what keeps us coming back, is, you know,
sure.
you always learn something new. But so I have Around the Bay in like 2 weeks or something like that. And, you know, I really, really, really just want to just have no watch and just enjoy it because, you know, I don't want to set myself off like that where it's just, you know, it could feel really, it felt really brutal out there. I mean, I had no business, you know, and then have you ever taken yourself out of a race? Have you ever signed up for one? And not, yeah, right?
So you not that there's really any shame in that. You know, sometimes it is the smart thing to do if you're really suffering out there. And if, especially if you have a chance, as some elite athletes have done, if you're not having a great day, and finishing the race means you won't be able to do another race for 3 months, but stepping out at 30K means you could race again in a month. That might be the smart thing to do. So I don't think there's any shame in a DNF, but it's never happened to me.
Yeah. Or what about this one, though? You know, where like a couple of days, you know, some part of me wondering, too, like, is this in my head? Like, you know, am I okay? Or am I just, is it nerves? You know, because you always feel a little like, oh, God, I didn't train enough or I didn't sleep well enough and all of this. But, yeah, it was a perfect storm. And now the funny thing is now I'm as sick. And the last time I was this sick was after the Good Life Marathon 2 years ago in May. So there is something about this running stuff where I like the notion of like giving it every single thing that I've got, which is ridiculous because it's like now I'm doing a terrible job with my kids. You know, it's
But there's that whole thing, too, when you're not feeling well, of when can I get back to running? Should I run today? Should I rest? What's better for me? My friend Bob always talks about how when he's got a cold, he wants to go running just to kind of bust it out of his system, although I don't think there's any scientific basis for that. So who knows, right?
Yeah.
You just have to listen to your body.
Yeah. So, I just think, I guess if there's any takeaway from this, is like just for folks listening, it's like, you and I are like pretty experienced with this stuff. We've done this a lot of time. Like I spend a lot of time thinking about running and talking to runners, blah, blah, blah. And I still routinely do, absolutely ridiculous decisions and terrible choices,
Yeah. Now, it's interesting that we're talking about this today because we have Rick Raymond on the show today. Rick Raymond, the Toronto dentist who has run every single day, whether he's hurting, whether he's sick, whatever, for almost 40 years. It'll be 40 years in December, so he's 39 years and 4 months now. And he's done hundreds of marathons, of course. We're going to talk to him about what has kept him going for all this time and why he does this. And
that story, he's one of the most fascinating guys in running. That story is like one of the most popular ones that we've put on our site in a long time. He's really, it's great to have him on the show.
Yeah, we profiled him in one of the very first issues of iRun, probably 10 years ago, 9.5 years ago. And then you recently did an interview with him that's on the website now, and people can check it out at irun.ca. We're also going to talk about the life of Roger Bannister, who broke the 4-minute mile in 1954. And I always associate my dad with this story because my dad used to talk about that event. My dad grew up in England. He was 17, roughly, at the time that this happened. And it came a year after Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay reached the peak of Mount Everest. So it was really a time of testing the boundaries and really trying to break down the barriers, testing the limits of the human experience and adventure. And there was a new queen in England at the time, and so much was going on. So I remember my dad talking about that, and so we're going to talk to a Globe and Mail journalist who actually interviewed Roger Bannister a few years ago, and has written a very nice piece about his passing and what kind of a moment in history that was, and what kind of a person Roger Bannister was. So that's coming up as well.
His attributes seem very much like Ed, didn't it? Where he had running was one part of his life, not his whole life.
Yeah, Ed Whitlock, you mean, yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sorry about that.
All right, Ben, thank you. We will talk to you next week when I hope you will be feeling better.
See you out on the racetracks.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's general manager and editor. And coming up next, we will have more on the life of Roger Bannister. Canada's longest-running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. Welcome back to iRun Radio. We're joined now by David Ebner, who writes for the Globe and Mail and interviewed Roger Bannister a few years ago to mark the 60th anniversary of his breaking the 4-minute mile and winning the Miracle Mile against John Landy. Roger Bannister, of course, passed away last weekend at the age of 88. David, thank you for being with us on iRun Radio.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So you had the pleasure of interviewing Roger Bannister, and I take it really was a pleasure. From what you wrote about him, he comes across as a real British gentleman.
Yeah, it absolutely was. You know, I have fun in journalism in general, and sometimes interviews are difficult, and sometimes they're fun, and occasionally they're really a pleasure. And it's not often we get to speak with living legends. I mean, when I wrote about sports, I got to meet Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which was pretty cool. Obviously, one of the greats of all time. But speaking with Roger Bannister was a bit something else. Obviously, he's died recently at 88. I spoke to him 4 years ago. And it was a privilege to be able to connect with him. I was writing at the time on the 60th anniversary of the record mile from 1954 and also the Miracle Mile race against John Landy here in Vancouver, where I'm based.
And let's talk about that time, because what's remarkable about this story that came to light in what you wrote is is that Roger Bannister actually came very close to giving up running permanently not long before he ran the sub-4-minute mile, the first ever. And then he gave it up shortly after that for good. By the end of 1954, the year in which he not only set the world record in that sub-4-mile run, but also broke it again in the race with John Landy in Vancouver, by the end of that year, he was finished with running.
Yeah, it's a different time, really. I guess, A, we have to point out there wasn't any money in it. I suppose he could have pushed on to the next Olympics, which weren't so far away, but more than a year in 1956. He retired at the end of 54, and he had really accomplished what he had set out to. He was a gold medal favorite back in 52. They ended up adding a heat to those Olympics, the 1500 meters, and it threw off his rhythm. And he didn't have his finishing kick in that race, and he finished fourth. And you know, you can imagine finishing fourth at the Olympics, especially when it was you to be the winner of gold, can drive a man. He did put it away running for a little bit in 53 when it was interfering with his medical studies, but then picked it up again because the lure of breaking the 4-minute mile was quite strong. But again, really, no money in it, no Nike at the time, no million-dollar paycheck, even though he was kind of a sensation, more than a sensation. It was worldwide news, and they were on newsreels, they were on front pages. But again, a bit more of an amateur era where there was no living to be made from running. And John, Roger was more than just a runner. He was a gentleman, certainly, but he was also a doctor, and he often would remark through his career as a neurologist, where he was quite accomplished, that he'd prefer to be remembered as a neurologist, which again, we can all smile at. I mean, he put together one of the towering achievements in athletic history in the 20th century, and then he'll humbly say, I'd prefer to be remembered as a neurologist, where he was also quite successful.
Yeah, and we can't overlook that, but of course, we're going to remember him for 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds in the mile.
Record.
And when he broke the barrier, obviously there's no reason to think that if you can run a mile in 4 minutes and 1 second that you can't do it in 3 minutes and 59 seconds, or that somebody can't. But the previous record had stood for almost a decade, so it was a big deal, and it was a threshold that we are, just like we are obsessed now with trying to break the two-hour marathon, there is something about these magic numbers in sports, isn't there?
It absolutely is. I mean, we look at the 100 meters these days to kind of that pinnacle of athletic potential. We're not running 105 meters, right? Because we like round numbers. We like beautiful shapes. And the mile was a beautiful race at the time. It's not as popular anymore. It's been replaced essentially by the 1500 meter, and even middle distance has been replaced by the marathon or straight up sprinting. But at the time, the mile was a real test of what you could do on the track, and it was beautiful in its symmetry. They would run quarter miles, this one oval, and trying to do it in slightly less than 4 minutes, which was slightly less than a minute per loop. And you know, again, human beings love symmetry. And they pressed up against it for about a decade. Like you said, the record was set in 45 at about 4 minutes and a second and a little more than that. John Landy was running 4:02. Bannister was running like three quarters of a mile in less than 3 minutes. So between the two of them, there was a real sense that they could do it. But they were bumping up against it, so it seemed formidable, but neither of them. They were young men. They were ambitious. They were confident. They felt one of them could do it. And John, Roger, when speaking with him about in 2014, he had a line saying something like he knew that he had 4 minutes inside of him somewhere, and if he could manage to bring it out in the right moment.
And he did, and then he did it again in that miracle mile against John Landy. And what struck me when I was looking at some of the pictures from those events over the last few days since Roger Bannister passed away is that there's agony on his face as he crosses the finish line. It's a triumph, and it's, I'm sure, a joy. But to run at that speed, I think you said it was over 24 kilometers an hour, a speed that most treadmills don't even get to run at that speed for 4 minutes is incredibly painful.
It's kind of ridiculous. You know, I'm a very minor recreational runner. Obviously, you run distance as well, quite well, too, for a recreational runner. But these super elite speeds, even if the 4-minute mile has been reduced to about 3:43 is the record, and a number of elite runners per year do break the four-minute mile. But when you step back and look at it, not many. I looked at the tally on the Athletic Federation International website. I think it was about 90 men ran sub 4 minutes last year outdoors. So that's a lot, maybe, you know, 90. But really, there's 700 players in the NHL, for instance, so 700 elite hockey players, and only 90 runners crack 4 minutes. So it's still quite the accomplishment, I think. If you can do it, you really in a stratosphere. And the effort required, Bannister was also quite a writer. He wrote a book about the mile, and he wrote throughout his career as a neurologist. But he described at Oxford in May 1954, when he crossed the finish line, he described, as he collapsed into the officials after the finish line, he described feeling like an exploded flashbulb. And yeah, just kind of shattered, you know, totally exhausted.
Yeah.
And that's what's fascinating to people. This was the limits of the physical capacity of a human being. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah, incredible. And then let's talk about the Miracle Mile as it was billed between him and John Landy at the Empire Games in the summer of 1954 in Vancouver, because there was quite a dramatic finish to that race as well, when John Landy kind of looked over the wrong shoulder and Roger Bannister passed him.
Yeah, and I got to speak with both gentlemen in 2014 to remember the race. And a bit of a backdrop. So Bannister sets the mile record, breaks 4 minutes in early May 1954. He knew that John Landy was in Finland at the time, aiming to do the same thing. Landy, in fact, 6 weeks later, did break the 4 minute mile and broke Bannister's record by 1.4 seconds. So Landy had the world record. So Bannister held it for only 6 weeks. So this sets up at the Empire Commonwealth Games, you know, the British Empire. The games were set to be in Vancouver, and Landy's an Australian. Bannister's obviously a Brit. It was hugely, hugely hyped. Sports Illustrated called it something like the most contemplated foot race of all time in the hyperbole of sports writing of the day, and perhaps that continues in modern times. But people were pumped to see it. There were more than 30,000 people at the stadium, and they put on a great show. It wasn't just like sometimes, you know, 1,500 meters, you get the best racers together, and they don't run full steam. You know, they kind of race against each other. But in this case, in 54 here in August, they were both flying. And at one point, Bannister told me Landy had a good lead about halfway, and Bannister worried. He's like, whoa, maybe I've let him go too far ahead. Bannister always relies on his finishing kick. And so the way it plays out, near the finish, Landy, who had some distance between him and Bannister, is kind of probably wondering, where is Roger? Looks over his left shoulder. Unfortunately for Landy, at that moment, Bannister's famous finishing kick is the turbojets are on, and he's flying by Landy's right side to the finish. They both broke 4 minutes, and what a great, great race, and Bannister was the victor that day.
But it shows you something about timing, what you just alluded to, the fact that the Bannister broke the world record by about 2 seconds, and then it was broken 6 weeks later by John Landy by another second and a half or so. And yet it's Roger Bannister we remember all these years later. Of course, many people remember John Landy too, but Bannister is sort of the Neil Armstrong in this scenario by being the first to get under 4 minutes, right?
And that's how sports is, you know, just like in life, timing can be everything. And in the Miracle Mile, that kind of cemented Bannister as kind of the victor in the mile. Bannister didn't break Landy's record, though. Landy's record stood for, I think, about 3 years, and then the record came down slowly over time, over the decades. But Landy actually held the mile record for 3 years. But again, you know, that's how history plays out. But I don't think either man, John or Roger, was... I mean, you have an ego when you're an elite athlete, but I think they're both quite humble, and I'm sure John would have liked to have set the record first, but that's how it played out.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about the time when this happened, too. It's post-World War II England. There's a new queen. Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay have just the year before reached the summit of Everest for the first time. It was really an age of discovery and of testing the limits of the boundaries on human beings, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. You know, you have to imagine, it's hard to now. I know there's a lot of wars around the world and things seem tough with terrorism, but the scope and depth of World War II it's a little hard to imagine, and Europe was completely ravaged, so things such as running the mile maybe aren't the biggest priority. Coming into the 50s, England is still struggling, but recovering. Modernity is emerging. Of course, there was a modern world before that, but really the post-Second World War world is emerging. And like you said, the Queen's inaugurated in 53, an Englishman and a Sherpa stand on top of Everest, which was a long-standing goal of decades, you know. And, you know, standing on top of the highest mountain in the world, a new queen, the British Empire, after this beating it took in barely surviving that war, there's a reinvigoration in the empire. And Bannister described to me a patriotic fervor at the time. And I don't think he's necessarily swept up in it, but his accomplishment was swept up in it. And it was held up as something to aspire to, and kind of a beacon of the future and what people could do after all this death, that there was life.
Yeah, very well said. David, it's a real pleasure to talk to you again. I really appreciate you joining us on the show and sharing these memories, these very important memories of Roger Bannister. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you.
That's Globe and Mail correspondent David Ebner in Vancouver. You can read his stories about Roger Bannister on the Globe website. Coming up next, a group of runners who are remembering a colleague lost to a devastating disease. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa, and you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at irun.ca. Just click on radio. Kuniko Soda is a runner from Ottawa who works at a local law firm. She has organized a team of runners who are going to be participating in Ottawa Race Weekend to honor a colleague who died of ALS, and she has a fascinating story as well of her first marathon. Kuniko, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into running, and then we'll talk about what you and your colleagues are doing at Ottawa Race Weekend.
Okay. Well, I have been running myself since I was a teenager, but I didn't really start racing long distances until I was in my 40s. And then I started doing halves, and then I did marathons, and then now I mostly do fulls and halves, some 10Ks.
Yeah, well. And what is it about running that appeals to you?
You know, it's just I when I'm running, I don't really think about anything. My mind goes completely empty, and then I find it very refreshing, and you know, it just feels really good, and that's what I like about running.
Okay. And tell me about the first marathon you did. Which one was that?
Oh, my very first one was when I was 18, actually. When I was 20, I did Honolulu. And I was still living in Japan back then. And then I moved to Canada in the 90s. And then my first full marathon here was the Ottawa Race Weekend in 2011.
Okay.
I believe, yeah.
So your first marathon was when you were 20, is that right?
Yes.
And what made you decide to do a marathon then? Because not everybody who's 20 years old is into long-distance running. It's usually something people pick up later.
That's right, yeah. Well, see, the age 20 is a coming of age in Japan. It's a big thing in Japan. And then all my cohorts were, you know, attending this big ceremony in the area, all dressed up in traditional kimonos and then whatnot, and it was costs obviously a lot of money for the parents. So I asked my parents if I could go to Hawaii and run a marathon instead of, you know, buying me this brand new kimono for the ceremony, and then they said okay. So I just did the marathon instead of attending a ceremony.
Okay. And what made you decide to do that? That's a big decision, obviously, to go to your parents and say, I don't want to do the coming-of-age ceremony that all my colleagues and cohorts are doing. Instead, I'm going to go on a trip to Hawaii and run a marathon.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I I don't think they thought much of it, actually, and then maybe they're used to my craziness back then.
But what made you decide that that was what you wanted to do as opposed
right,
to...
Right, yeah. So I just wanted to... I just didn't like... I don't know anything traditional back then, and then I just thought that it was such a waste of money to buy something that's so expensive, and then you wouldn't wear on a daily basis. So just wanted to have the experience, and then doing something that I've never done, or something that nobody else is doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could have gone on a trip to Hawaii without running a marathon, but you decided to run the marathon while you were there. So what was that experience
right.
like?
Yeah, I think I was always running, and then since I was much younger, and then I really liked the sport, and I don't know, I just thought the idea of running a full marathon, I don't remember, that's like almost 30 years ago, so I can't really recall what exactly I was attracted to about running a little marathon, but it's just the distance. It was just such a, it felt like a huge challenge for me at that time. So.
And do you remember what the experience of running the marathon was like?
Yes, my first one was, I just loved it. And then it just, I didn't train much for it. Back then, I didn't know much about training for a marathon, but I just loved the mass start in the dark, and the sun coming up, and then Diamond Head, and then it's just beautiful. And all the cheering and the crowds on the streets, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. That was the first time that I actually traveled outside Japan, and then it was my very first passport, and then it was just so exciting. Everything was so fresh and new and then exciting.
Tell me a little bit about what happened after the Honolulu Marathon then. You enjoyed the experience, so did you end up doing more right away?
Actually, no. I didn't continue racing for some reason. I guess I got really busy with schoolwork, and then I didn't really think much of racing. But I was jogging and then running for exercise. But then I moved to Canada after graduating from university in Japan, and then came here. And then it was still just jogging in Vancouver first, and then I moved to Ottawa, and then didn't really. I don't know why, but I didn't really think of racing very much until I was in my 40s. And then this idea of training for races, and then started doing it.
Yeah. So there's a long gap between your first and your second marathon then.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, tell me a little bit about the group that you're pulling together to run at Ottawa Race Weekend this year, and what your plan is and why you're doing it.
Right, yeah. So I, about 27 people, including myself, got together and then formed this team to run on the Ottawa Race Weekend. That is a charity challenge, and we're running for... ALS Society of Canada, because one of our senior managing partners, David Morrow, passed from ALS in 2013, and he was such a highly respected lawyer and manager, and not just within our office, but in the whole legal community in Canada. So I thought it'd be a great way to pay our respect for him by participating in this challenge.
Yeah. And so how many people are running on your team?
27 at the moment.
27. That's great.
Yeah.
And obviously you're an experienced runner. You're leading this group, but are there some people who are running for the first time?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we are a very diverse group. I mean, and some of us have never run or raced before. And so they were kind of hesitant at the beginning and, you know, to join the team. But then I just assured them that it's not about time. It's not about finishing time. It's more about participation and, you know, doing something fun as a team.
How does it feel for you to be leading this up and to be organizing this in memory of your former colleague?
You know, it's a very positive experience, I would say. It's great to see so many people express their interest in running itself, and then running as a team, running with their coworkers, and for a common goal. And then I think it's just I myself have never seen anything like this in our office before. And you know, we've had some hockey teams or volleyball teams for other charity goals before, but never running. So I running is my thing. So I'm really excited that I can do, and then again, I can be connected with all my some of my coworkers through the physical activity that I like.
You're passing it on. You're sharing your sport. Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you going to run the marathon?
Yes.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. It sounds like you are doing some great things to inspire your colleagues to run, and you're raising money for a very important cause. So I wish you the best of luck with your training, and good luck at Ottawa Race Weekend at the end of May. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much, Mark.
That's Kaniko Soda of Ottawa. Coming up next, our friend Rick Raymond, who has run every day for more than 39 years. Canada's longest-running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. We're joined now on iRun Radio by Rick Raymond, a Toronto dentist who has run every single day for more than 39 years. Rick, it is great to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Great to talk to you, Mark. I look forward to speaking to you anytime I can.
So how many marathons is it now?
Miami, which was the end of January, was 353.
353. Wow. That's incredible. And how many days in a row? It's more than...
Well, I just read, I haven't got the hard copy yet, and I Run magazine, I think on page 8 or 9, it's over 14,100 and change days.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, incredible.
A lot of days.
Yeah. And have you done any new marathons lately? Have you had any new experiences? I know you've done Miami many times.
Yeah, too many times. The newest, I guess what I did last year, if you recall in September, I guess everybody recalls, they canceled Montreal Marathon like on the Wednesday. So
because of the heat, right?
Running, yeah, exactly. And that's funny you said that, but being obsessed with running marathons, I found one in Binghamton, New York.
Okay.
And which is about the same distance, very small marathon, put on by Dick's Sporting Goods. And it was the first time myself and one other runner, actually ironically from Ottawa, we were the first international runners to run this event. But the funny thing, it was hotter in Binghamton that Sunday than it was in Montreal.
Wow. And they still had their event.
They didn't think twice about canceling it.
Yeah.
And a number were canceled that day. The one in Scroon Lake, I can't remember what they call it, but that was canceled, and a few others in upstate New York. But Binghamton, it was brutal. And it was small and out and back on a highway. And I was by myself for, I would say, for 10 miles. I didn't see anybody. And luckily, there was a cyclist that was cycling beside me. Otherwise, it would have been tougher than it was.
Now, let's talk about a couple of things that came to light in the interview that you did with Ben Kaplan in iRun, which people can read in the magazine or at iRun.ca. And
right.
One of them is the fact that you've never set foot on a treadmill.
Never.
Wow.
Never.
So you've always run outside.
And again, I'm far from elitist. I mean, if you know, I'm running a lot slower now. But I feel, I mean, obviously some days you can get a better workout on a treadmill. But if you're a marathon runner, marathons are run outside, not inside.
Right.
So I feel as snowy or icy or hot or whatever it is, I think that's part of it. You know, the environment and the conditions are part of running marathons.
And I have met your wife a couple of times at events. She's often by your side when you travel to events or when I see you in Toronto and you're participating in the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon or one of the other events there.
Right.
And she has been with you for more than 300 of the 353 marathons that you've done.
For sure. First of all, my whole family is very supportive. When my kids were younger, I remember probably the third marathon I did in Toledo, Ohio, my son came with me. I think he was around 4 or 5, and my father-in-law came with me, and I took my son. And gradually, they grew out of, you know, watching me finish marathons. But my wife still is a strong supporter, and some of these marathons, many of them are like holidays now. You know, when we go away,
sure.
You could say in May, I'm going to Ann Arbor, so we'll spend an extra day there. So it's a nice little, you know, getaway.
Why not?
Nothing
wrong with Miami in January, Rick.
It wasn't great weather.
Oh, really?
It was probably
better than here.
I don't know about that day. It was really windy, and it was quite hot, obviously, but the wind, which was intense, it hurt the fast runners. It really helped me because it cooled me off. I was out there for a long time. But
now,
again, you know, having a strong family support is crucial, as you know.
Yeah. And we shared some pictures, and we did this. We profiled you in the magazine. I'm going to say probably 9 years ago when the magazine was still, it was probably our second or third issue. We did a story about you. And I think we took a picture of you in similar circumstances, but you have many of your race bibs on a wall in your house, right?
I know I sent that to Ben. I think he put it in.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, in the interview, he did. Yeah. So they go back. I think I didn't start collecting them or saving them till after probably 2000.
Okay.
To maybe 2001. I could have had a lot more, but I didn't.
So
now
you,
I save them all.
Yeah, you could, the ones from back in the 80s and 90s, you probably don't have all of those.
I wish I did.
Yeah, but you still like getting the medal at the finish line, right? That's always a good feeling.
I run them for T-shirts and medals.
Yeah.
That's it.
And do you have any favorites among the medals you've received?
Miami's always beautiful. Even though they didn't, they had problems with their medals this year. But I'm trying to think. I love, and I'm not saying this because it's Scotiabank, which is one of my favorite, if not my favorite marathon now. Their medals every year are just phenomenal, you know, depicting another area of the city. So, and they're so beautifully designed. So that's one of my favorites. I don't like big chunky medals.
Right.
But I used to, but so Miami is one of my favorites, as is Toronto. And I probably could go back and think of some, you know what else is up there in my top three? Wine glass in Corning, New York, because
right.
It's a glass medal.
Yeah.
And have you ever done that?
I haven't, but I've heard great things about that event.
It is a fast course, not for me, but for you it would be a fast. It's a great event, and the medals each year are a different color, so I can't wait to see what color they are this year.
And what other events do you have coming up, Rick? What have you got planned this spring?
It's interesting what I got, and I hope I can do it. Starting April 22nd, I believe that's the Sunday, I've got Glass City in Toledo, Ohio. And I've watched that marathon really evolve. It is a phenomenal event now. And I'm the only Canadian ambassador. And just a quick side note, they asked me, there's a lot of Canadians who run it, especially from Ontario. And they asked me, they've never sung the Canadian national anthem. So they asked me if I know anybody who could do it. I didn't get back to them because I couldn't think of anybody, but two of my grandsons, one's 7, one's 9, they're going to sing the Canadian national anthem before the event.
Wow. So your grandkids are going to sing the Canadian national anthem before the Toledo Marathon?
Yeah, they're very wow. talented kids.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's
special.
On the 22nd. A week later is St. John Ambulance in Waterloo, which is a phenomenal little event. And I told Ben this. Tony Lee, the race director, always gives me bib number one.
That's
and
cool.
Last year, I wore number one, but I came in last.
Okay.
So I can accept
That's
it.
All right. Nothing wrong with that.
No, I don't mind anymore. A week later is Good Life. Then a week after that is a brand new one, which you might have heard, called Mudcat Marathon in Dunville, Ontario.
I haven't heard of that one.
I think that's on the Saturday. Great little event. It's the second year, and they did great last year for a first-year marathon. And the race director, named Cheryl, she's wonderful. A week after that, I'm going to Ann Arbor. They changed the date of the Ann Arbor Marathon from this month to May. And then after that is Buffalo. And Buffalo, I could be in Ottawa that weekend, but we go to Buffalo.
Yeah, it's a little closer to Toronto for you, and I know you travel a lot.
That's the only reason.
Yeah.
That's the only reason.
Now, Rick, later this year, if all goes well, you're going to hit a huge milestone, 40 years of running every single day, because this started in December of 1978, right?
Yeah, that's right. It'll be 40 years.
And are you going to do anything to mark that occasion?
I don't know. I tried to take one day at a time. I don't know. I probably will. You know, my wife always takes me out on the anniversary, but we'll see what happens at 40. Thinking back, the fellow who keeps track of the North America streak list, I'm not on the North American list, it's only Americans, but his name's Steve DeBoer. I think he's second or third. And we were talking maybe 2-3 months ago, and he said he'd be happy to come up here and run with me the day that I hit 40 years.
Wow.
But that means he'd have to stay at my house, so we'll have to think about that.
Well, it's a big milestone. We'll be talking to you again before that, I'm sure, Rick. But
yeah,
I want to congratulate you on all you've done. You're such a great ambassador for our sport, and I look forward to seeing you in an event coming up soon. Thanks for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Always great talking to you, Mark.
That's Rick Raymond, who is on a running streak of almost 40 years. Coming up on next week's iRun Radio, we're going to talk to the guy who has more entries on SportsStats, the timing company website, than any other athlete, and one of the people who's on the cover of the latest issue of iRun. I hope you can join us then. Have a great week.